Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we got a very special episode for you, talking with the incomparable Robert Kirkman and David Finch, the team behind Skinbreaker from Skybound. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Howdy.
Thanks for having us.
No problem.
Robert on a horse holding a lasso currently, just so y'all are aware.
Yeah, you know.
How he does it.
I'm doing some roping.
Excited to talk about this book, just to get the business out of the way. The final order cutoff for it is August 18th. That's Monday. And it's going to be on sale in comic book stores on September 24th. And this has been a really long road for you guys. I would love to start with that because just based on the back matter, we have a chance to read the book. We'll keep it spoiler free here. But you guys have been working on this in some aspects for about 8 years at this point. Is that correct?
I mean, 8 years in its entirety, the book is officially 100% done. Well, there's a couple of tweaks here and there, but it's done. all the pages are drawn. It did take a while, but when we talk about this, I feel a little self-conscious because it's not that David was slow or took too much time on the pages or anything like that. It's that it's a monumental amount of work, and he drew this book in such a unique format at massive sizes so that every page was essentially like 5 or 6 normal pages worth of work. And he was inking himself. So it did take a good long while to do the project, but it shows when you look at it, like why, you know, this was just a monumental undertaking on his part.
David, can you talk about what that means to do something at such a large scale? Because hearing that feels crazy to the uninitiated. So tell us why and what's great about that.
Well, on the upside, it means that I can put all the detail I could possibly imagine into a page. It also makes the figures, I think, a little bit stronger because when you get very small with figures, it gets difficult to it's hard to draw small figures. It really is. And you lose a little bit of character and a little bit of emotion. And I was able to get more into every figure and more into the backgrounds. And I love detail. You know, it's kind of my favorite. I like laying out a page, but I love just sitting there noodling more and more detail. And so it really just fit with my personality to be able to do that. And it was such a privilege to have the time to be able to do it. The downside is just really the time. It was a major, major time commitment. And I've been dying for the story to come out for so long. I haven't had a book up for quite a while, and you know, I've started to be a little you know, conscious of the fact that, hey, I haven't had anything out for a while. So being able to not only have something finally, you know, come out and hit the shelves, but for it to be a book that I was able to put everything I have into from start to finish, there are no point in the book where I was working to a deadline and just had to get the page done, and it just is what it is. Every page is the very best that I could possibly make it. So it's a book I'm incredibly proud of.
Was there?
It feels like a last comment on that. It's like IMAX for comics. It feels like is maybe
yes.
The outsider way to describe it. Like you work big, and so you get so much more detail crammed into the pages.
Yeah, as much as I could. There's so many ways for an artist to be, you know, good that don't include detail, and probably all the most important ways. So maybe I'm overcompensating a little bit, you know, with detail.
I love the flex. Well, we got a flex.
Well, we should obviously talk about the story at some point, maybe down the road. But David, just to stay on this for a bit, when you're dealing with these double-sided pages, it's being reduced to a regular comic book size. So what does that change in terms of the art, in terms of taking it and essentially, I assume, making it like half size towards print?
Yeah, no. So initially, this was, first of all, it was going to be a much shorter story when we started, which is part of the reason why I did it so big, because I thought I might not ever get the chance to work with Robert again. And it's a big opportunity for me, you know, so I wanted to absolutely make the most of it. And then it grew longer and longer and longer, and, you know, became what it is now. And I was cheering that on the whole way. So, you know, I was more than happy, but it turned into a big thing. I'm sorry. I completely blanked.
Well, I may never get the chance to work with David Finch again. I have to make this project as long as possible.
It feels like, based on what you're saying, David, and what you wrote in the back matter, Robert, it feels like this is a love affair that you guys are having in the pages of something that is not yet about much love, story-wise.
It's definitely a labor of love, I think, for both of us. And I don't know. Yeah, I've been a huge fan of David's work for as long as I can remember. So the opportunity to work with him is really a dream come true. And it does feel mutual. I think we do have like a equal respect for what it is that we bring to projects. And it's been, you know, just absolutely fantastic working with him on this book.
And did you write the pages double-sided as well?
Yeah, he used a huge font.
40 point.
So to accentuate what he was doing with the massive pages, I made my panel descriptions as brief as possible.
That's great. Went the other way.
Let's talk about the story a little bit. So this takes place, there's not a lot, and I laudably say this, but there's not a lot set up in the first issue. You're sort of thrust into the situation. Maybe it's another planet. Maybe we're looking at orcs. Maybe there's something else going on here. We're not quite sure. But mostly we're following this tribe that is dealing with a bit of a succession issue, and you're exploring the mythology. So I don't know how much more you want to talk about it, because I assume at least part of the series is discovering who these people are, what's going on with them. But what was the emotional theme? What was like the hook for you there going into this book?
I mean, it was really just about like these people and their struggles to survive, and how those struggles are changing and evolving over time, and how they're adapting or refusing to adapt. I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, whether or not it's an alien planet, or, you know, if this is some forgotten like civilization on Earth that went extinct millions of years ago that there's no fossil record of, you know, that's not really that important. I think that even though these are clearly not human characters, they still have relatable human traits. And I think this is a very relatable human story. And, you know, there's a lot of familiar elements. I mean, I'm always telling stories of families of some form, and, you know, there's a lot of father-son relationships in what I do. And, you know, I just think that's, you know, fun ground to explore, and there's a little bit more of it explored here. But I really kind of wanted to just try to, you know, it's a lived in world, and I think it's a fairly like well built world that you'll be experiencing over the course of this story. But I wanted to make this a propulsive story that was as simple as possible, so that, you know, there's great character moments and there's things that you can really hang your hat on, but it's really about like moving from one set piece to the other, and giving David a playground to kind of, you know, make this story as grandiose as possible with his visuals. So yeah, that's kind of the thing, the thought that went behind it.
It strikes me reading it that there's so much world built here. Like there's a lot of ritual in the characters and sort of the society that we see here. When you were sort of getting into the story from Seed to sort of where you started working with David on it, was that sort of outworld first? Like what was sort of the first pieces of this that came together for you?
I'm a visual thinker, so I tend to think of cool images and then I backwards engineer things that make them happen or make them not to spoil story elements of the first issue for anyone who hasn't read it yet, but it'd be really cool if this guy's son didn't have any skin, you know?
Yeah.
and stories kind of come from there. So I think that while it does seem like a very, very complex world, I think that I kind of write in a way that I get to discover that stuff as I go. So a lot of things are being built, as I'm writing them. And a lot of things are, you know, as pages come in from David, the story changes and evolves and grows in really cool ways. And I think that by the time you get to the eighth issue, this is a very rich world with a lot of depth, and a lot of that depth is from me interpreting things that he would put into the pages as he was drawing the story. And I would go, okay, I'm going to do a little detour and talk about this for a while, and I'm going to explore this thing. And it really made the story a lot better.
Can you give us an example? Because I love that as a way of working. I feel like that's a... Yeah, we don't hear about that as often anymore in the comic book world, of how the story changed or an element, a side quest you went on as you.
Yeah, were, I mean, the best example of that is I just said, you know, they're walking through woods with weapons and, you know, maybe the weapon is, you know, like whatever. And David drew this crystal sword on page 2 and 3, the 2-page spread. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess the book is about that now. the titular skin breaker. That's what the sword is called. And there was some element of it, you know, like existing in the story before, but all the ins and outs of it and a lot of different, you know, mythology came from that with the shard bearers and the It's all going to sound like nonsense if I talk about it now, but it just kind of spiraled through the story, and those ripples kind of improved a lot of different things along the way, and that happened many, many times throughout the story. Where he would draw, you know, a certain creature a certain way, and then I'd be like, oh, that's going to come back later. Various things like that.
Well, David, for you then, how does that discovery process work for you? Like when you are not getting something necessarily from the script by Robert, we're like, oh, I'll draw on this crystal sword. And then suddenly that becomes the central element. How does that change your process? How does that affect
you? Yeah. Are you like, I hate crystal swords. Now I have to draw them all the time.
I love that. I got to influence the story in such a big way. And all I did is just draw a crystal sword. You know, I just thought, hey, this will look kind of cool. That's really my whole thought process, start to finish. You know, I don't think deeply about this stuff at all. I just thought, that'll look cool. And it's like this whole big thing, which I can now fully take credit for.
what about the look of the characters then? I know this is jumping back a little bit, but like I said, for anybody who hasn't seen the art, who's listening to this or watching this, they look kind of orc-like, but that's not specifically what's going on with them. What inspired the look of the characters for you?
Well, I would say we went through a lot of different versions. We went very, very alien. And very different. And that's actually initially Robert was looking at doing something that was very different looking. But drawing the emotions that we really relate with well with creatures that are very different, it might be a little bit outside my wheelhouse. So that's a factor. And ultimately, we rested on something that I think is just a little more relatable.
Robert, this is touching on something we discussed earlier as well, but I feel like with your stories, there's always this, not always, but there's often like a twist hook, like there's a twist sort of like waiting in the background. This feels like that's not there. Does that challenge you? I mean, maybe there is, but does that challenge you in a different way as a writer to sort of put those tools to the side and try something different?
You say tools, I say crutches.
What is a crutch but a sick tool? The best tool.
That's true. But no, I don't know. I think there's definitely some twists and turns in the story coming up that, you know, I don't think people will expect. But yeah, I don't know. I wanted this to be, a pretty compelling story. I mean, I think that's really the thing that is most important to me is page to page, panel to panel. Is the story moving you forward? Are you dying to turn the page? Are you excited about what's coming up next? So sometimes that's a twist, sometimes it's not. But more than anything, I'm just trying to make sure that at no point is this story boring, because if it's boring for David to draw, it's going to be boring for people to read. And so that's why every now and then something's got to explode.
How does it feel different from your other work for both of you doing something like this, where it is like you guys are a little bit jamming out, it feels like. You're both have worked in the industry forever, as opposed to doing something like Void Rivals or something, David, like where you're working for on a more big two superhero comic. Is it more time consuming? Is it more of you occupying different parts of your brain? How is it different?
I mean, for me, the biggest difference is that it is a contained story with a beginning, middle, and an end. Like most of the things I do, even if, you know, they are planned to have a beginning, middle, and an end, it's going to occur over, 36 issues or something like that. I usually do pretty long form story stuff. So to do a story that's contained within 8 issues is somewhat difficult for me. And is a welcome challenge, because I'm always trying to make sure that everything I do has a little bit of a different flavor. But also, writing the story to cater to David's sensibilities and his strengths, makes it inherently different from what I'm doing on other books. And unfortunately I couldn't squeeze a Transformer in this one.
I'll believe it when I finish the final issue. Yeah.
David, what about you?
Well, certainly it took longer than anything I've ever done. More work went into it, for sure. I love drawing superhero comics a lot. And it's what I got into comics to do. I loved X-Men. And so I enjoyed doing all of that work. But there's something about being able to create a world from the ground up, obviously not entirely my own at all. It's, I'm interpreting a story and a mythology that Robert came up with, but I get to have such a stamp on it too. And that's a big responsibility and a huge amount of fun. So that's just not something that I've been able to do for years, and never to this extent. So that's a big deal. And then also, just in terms of the kind of art that I did for it, it's actually very different than what I'm used to. And I really would have expected Robert to give me something that is more like the kind of work that I'm known for, something more like Batman, that kind of thing. And, that would have been very comfortable for me to do and very enjoyable. I love that kind of work. But this really pushed me in a direction that was very different for me and is very, very challenging and a real surprise, because he wrote it for me. And, I certainly see that now. And I've seen that for quite a while, drawing the story, that it's something that, I could really sink my teeth into and put as much of myself as I could into. But starting was a real surprise. It's, a case of maybe somebody knowing you better than you know yourself creatively.
Oh, that's wow. So sweet.
That's nice.
Given that there has been this lengthy development process without the pressure of you got to release a monthly comic every single month, how much of a temptation has there been to go back and keep tweaking things and changing things? Or was there a certain point you're like, we got to move forward, we got to move on?
We're doing that now. Doing that. The whole book is finished. It's been finished since December. Okay. I've had some covers to do. And so we've gotten that. But there are a few places where I'm still making a few tweaks here and there. And it is incredibly difficult to let go of. It's everything that I ever do. And I'm sure for Robert, too, it's our baby when you're working on it. And, you know, I always care so much about the work that I do. This one is very special. I'd say more special. So it's difficult to let go and just say, it's good enough.
Robert, I did want to ask you really quickly, because you're going to be taking over Transformers very soon. Since you're picking up from Daniel Warren Johnson, are you also going to be writing and drawing?
To the chagrin of all Transformers fans everywhere, yes. No, definitely not. Come on, man.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, but you do have Dan Mora on it, who I believe can draw 30, 40 comic books a month, something like that. Stop. He's a machine. But what is it like working with him? What are you going to be bringing differently? Or is it just keeping the course that Daniel Warren Johnson set for the first 24 issues?
Joke answer. Working with Dan Mora is stressful. You have to have script ready for him at all times, and that is somewhat difficult. I think that my mode of operation on Transformers is do no harm. I think that book was firing on all cylinders, and I think what Daniel Warren Johnson and Jorge Corona were able to do with their run was spectacular. And so I'm trying to make it as seamless a transition as possible. I'm trying to go to like the old school, like Marvel and DC days where, a new creative team would come on and the subplots would keep running and, different stories that had been set up would pick up. And Daniel Warren Johnson, not Dan Mora, was kind enough to actually leave a few subplots dangling that, he was like, here's where I was planning on going, but, do your thing. And, and it was great because it gave him more room to focus on his climactic finish in issue 24. And so it's great, I'm having a lot of fun with the characters, and I'm going to try to introduce as many new elements as possible, because I feel like that's kind of the sweet spot of what we're doing with the Energon universe, is adding new elements and new flavors to things. But really I'm hoping that, you can pick up this issue and not really notice that there was at least a writing transition. So we'll see if that works out.
That's awesome.
And David, for you, now that you are doing the final tweaks on this, are you starting to think ahead at all to your next project? Are you maybe going to do a tiny comic this time, like a Jack
or Chick billboards
tract? Or a billboard,
billboard size?
I don't know, either direction.
I will say this: I am definitely thinking about my next book. I don't want to say more than that, but I'm not finished. I never want to stop drawing comics and interiors. It's very tempting to just say, hey, I'll just draw covers, and you just get to draw the hero shot all the time. And that is a lot of fun, but it's not what I got in comics to do. I want to tell stories and great stories, and I have the chance to be able to do that. And that's what I'm sticking with. I don't want to say anything beyond that, but I'm not finished by a long shot.
Awesome.
What are you going to do with all these giant pages in your house now? Just wall mounts?
I've got them, and I've got drawers, like the big art drawers, and it's taken up half of my half of my drawers. They're big. I don't want to let them go. I'm hanging on to them. I
bind them together to one actual giant size comic book.
There you go.
Just giant size skin breaker number one.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got all the pages. And I'd kind of like to hang on to them, I generally sell all of the art that I do, but I think not for this one.
Oh, wow. What a testament right there. You hear
for
that?
For real. I love that. Yeah. That is awesome. Guys, congratulations on the book. Reminder for everybody out there, Final Order Cutoff is August 18th, on sale September 24th. Thank you so much for coming on. A pleasure chatting, and looking forward to the rest of the run.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Always great to talk to you guys. Have a good one. Good luck.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken in time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.